This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver
Commercial
Real Estate Podcast.
Welcome back to the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. I'm Corey Wright.
And I'm Adam Scalina.
And Adam, we have an exciting show today. One I'm very excited to have. We have Raf Marola on from Marola Construction today. And we're talking about the retail TI process, which is very confusing. A lot of people have reached out and asked about it. But mainly we're focusing on restaurants. And it is probably the one thing I can say from like the brokerage side of the business that consistently is done wrong. And why I say it's done wrong is you get mom and pop operators, maybe when they're entering their first business, they don't understand the timelines that it takes to get these things open. They don't want to engage a gentleman like Raf and his company until too far in the process. And then they sign a lease and they sit in a space for months on end paying rent and they haven't started construction. They sometimes don't know if the base builds of the building can even service what they need. So we wanted to unpack that everywhere from like the mom and pop operations all the way up to the big guys. And Raf dives deep into how that process works.
Yeah. And we cover a lot of ground today, Corey. We talk a lot about how the TI landscape has changed over the last 5 to 10 years, the type of trends that Raf is seeing right now in the build outs for tenants and landlords. Some of the best ROI that you can get by in what TIs you're taking on.
Yeah.
Of course, some of the things he sees in his job, memorable jobs that he's done as well as horror stories. You want to stick around for that?
Absolutely.
There's some really great insights in this episode. I can't wait for that. Corey, why don't we jump to our conversation with Raf?
Enjoy, guys. It's a great one. This podcast is presented by Impact Commercial.
Impact Commercial, John, Alan, the team over there are fantastic. They've all been on the show.
They have, yeah.
Friends of the show.
Great guys.
Wealth of experience. They can help with all your commercial financing needs.
Whether it's owner-occupiers, land development funds, commercial investments, or multifamily, these guys got you covered.
And they recently obtained their CMHC correspondent lender status.
So for all your commercial lending needs, visit them at impactcommercial.ca.
That's impactcommercial.ca.
This podcast is sponsored by Atlin at Clayton Crest, a master plan community in the West Clayton area built by Zentera Developments.
Zentera is an absolute force, Adam. They've been nominated for Multifamily Builder of the Year for 10 consecutive years and just won again at the Georgies for 2025 Multifamily Home Builder of the Year.
What's really exciting about Atlin is the West Clayton location. You're within walking distance to the future SkyTrain station, giving you that perfect balance of city access while living in a peaceful, family-friendly community in the Fraser Valley.
And if you have kids or are planning to start a family, there's an on-site daycare where residents get first access. This kind of thoughtful planning is why Zentera's projects stand out in the market.
The amenities at Atlin are incredible too, Matt. A rooftop patio with stunning views, fitness center, co-working space, and lounge areas for events. The outdoor space is extensive with 2 fitness areas, 3 children's play areas, and multiple spots to relax.
With major investments happening in the SkyTrain and the 72nd Avenue extension, West Clayton is set for explosive growth. This is genuinely one of those opportunities to invest in a community before values skyrocket.
And that's really the key here. This isn't just about finding a beautiful place to live. It's about making a smart investment in your future as the whole area continues to develop.
Pre-sales for Atlin will begin soon. Register today at atlincondos.ca. That's atlincondos.ca.
Okay, so we're here with Raf Marola. He is the principal at Marola Construction. How you doing, Raf?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time. Raf, maybe to start, for some of our listeners that are not familiar with Marola Construction, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and then, of course, your company?
Happy to. Marola Construction is a full-service general contracting construction company. We're based in Burnaby, but we service all of the greater Vancouver area. It is my brother Rob and I who have started this business almost 20 years ago now and have seen it grow from doing your basic home renovation into, you know, a multifamily home builder, multifamily construction builder, and really specializing over the last 8 to 10 years in commercial tenant improvement projects, restaurant retail projects, and the like in the commercial world.
How did you get into construction, and why did you guys decide to focus on the commercial landscape?
Well, interesting in terms of us getting into construction, this has really always been my brother and I's passion. So this is really a passion project for us. We both went off to university and got university degrees. To a certain degree, you know, appeased our parents, appeased our desire to further our education pieces. But we always kept coming back to construction, whether it was paying our way through university or, you know, being able to work with friends and family members in doing this type of work. It was really our interest. Rob and I are sort of maybe unusually very close. We're really good buddies. And this was a business that allowed us to work together every day. And we were getting to work on something that we really enjoyed. So from the very beginning of our business and its very inception, we were able to work on things that we like doing every day. And we sort of sampled a whole variety of pieces of construction or different avenues in construction. As I said, we were doing, you know, basic home renovations when we started. And we always said, you know, we were two guys that bought a crappy old pickup truck and would take on anything anyone would give us. So we learned a lot of lessons in the school of hard knocks. And we, you know, slowly grew the type of project we took on. And we were fortunate to have worked with a host of, you know, some of the most prestigious architects in the city. And we were building interesting and complex residential projects. And we were able to work our way into doing some multifamily work, which was very interesting. And I think, you know, through that process, and as we sampled our first or got to work on our first restaurant or retail space, we realized that it was the thing that I think brought us the most passion and the most interest. We were working, we're big foodies, so we liked working on restaurants. They're complicated from a consultant perspective, and we were kind of adept at that and understanding of how that process had to work and then unfold, and it became the interesting piece that we were doing every day. And so as our business moved along, we spent, you know, more and more time sussing out and finding and building a name for ourselves in that world. And now it sort of just proliferates itself where we are well connected in you know, restaurant equipment space suppliers. We are connected with the commercial real estate agents that are out trying to find spaces for various entrepreneurs and tenants. And so, like, it just sort of proliferates itself forward now. And frankly, it's the thing that brings us probably the most interest that we do on a daily basis.
Right. I'm guessing that when somebody actually has a retail spot, like, there's probably in your mind, the appropriate time to bring you in the process. But when is that time? Like, and when do people typically reach out to Marola?
I think we see people come in at all different phases or facets of a project. So, you know, I'm going to generalize and say maybe the less experienced people, the less experienced entrepreneurs or business owners are maybe coming to us a little later thinking that they've got to secure a space and then get design and then they involve construction, you know, when they're getting close to construction. And that can work, and that, you know, there is cases out there where that makes sense. But I think that the real value that we add to our clients, and so many of them are repeat clients where we are, you know, providing the full gamut of our service to them, is that I'm out with them looking at prospective spaces to say, here's the pitfalls of what you're looking at. Here's where I think it's a great fit for the type of business that you're doing. We try really hard to understand our clients' businesses, understand their vision for what they want to see in the space. We try and get excited with them about the type of business that they're about to endeavor into. And so for us, and in my opinion, and I always say it's very like biased of the contractor to try and get in early and secure the work. I mean, it's not my, that's not my end game with it. It's that, you know, I've seen far too many people that have taken on or signed leases on spaces that simply don't make sense for the type of business that they're going to endeavor to put into it. And then you run into issues and problems of, you know, getting city approval, getting physically the construction, whether it's a restaurant or otherwise, into a space that wasn't designed from a base building perspective to allow for that. And, you know, I would say that we like to comment from the earliest juncture. And so if it's not at the point when the space is secured, definitely through design. And we're giving that as, you know, just like a bonus to the project of saying, bring us on for some pre-construction, allow us to comment on the design as it develops from a constructability perspective. Let us comment on, you know, the cost associated. I mean, I'd love to build, you know, extravagant design every day, but frankly, that doesn't work with every project budget. And so we try and rein people in early or rein design in early and engage all the, you know, relative consultants and make sure that we're trying to be a key cog in the wheel of developing these projects through design, helping with permitting and answering questions to, you know, city process, so that when we do get a building permit in hand, we're off to the races with construction and then able to manage time a little bit better than if we are to just take on a project when it's, you know, design is complete and they want to go and, you know, they haven't figured out any of these answers.
Well, you talk about time there, Raf. And one of the reasons why I want to have you on the program today is the restaurant build out, the TI process, can be one of the most fascinating, also one of the most expensive and one of the longest by far. And a lot of clients get people involved, in my opinion, way too late. They don't understand the ramifications what they're going into. They don't understand about mechanical systems and sprinkler systems and all this stuff that has to be taken in consideration with it. Can you maybe walk us through, like, what does a timeline look like? If I come to you as a potential client and I'm engaging you and your services there to say, hey, we want to open this restaurant, what type of timelines can I expect from the time, like maybe the design phase, and then we've got to go for permitting, and then how long is my build out? Like, just from a very like high level perspective, sure, what should people be considering when they're talking, when they're looking into these spaces?
Yeah, I think everybody has this misconception that they secure a space and that, you know, they'll be opening their doors a couple of short months later. And
yeah,
that's just simply not the case. And I would say it's cities, like municipality specifics,
yeah,
particularly in Greater Vancouver, but kind of anywhere you go. Yes, building out restaurants is a complicated process that takes, as I said, many consultants and many you know, sort of fundamental pieces of information that have to be sussed out. And that's, you know, as simple as understanding what equipment pieces are, you know, what kitchen equipment pieces are going to go into a restaurant, and figuring out, you know, the requirements of power for each and plumbing for each. And so to answer your question, Corey, you know, I always tell everybody, and it's a huge catch-all or generalization, but, you know, assume a year of time from when you first think of or look at securing a space to the point when you're actually opening the doors. And that's, on some projects, you know, way underselling the time that it might take.
Yeah.
We've got to go through a basic space planning on any space that's secured to understand, does it actually work? Is it big enough? Is it too big? Can we fit in all the pieces we need? As I was saying earlier, when I go out to a space and review it with a client, you know, we're looking to see, can you get your mechanical systems, your HVAC, your hood exhaust, which comes with lots of caveats, you know, particularly in the city of Vancouver, is it going to work? Do we have a point that logically exhausts this? And just ordering some of that equipment can be anywhere from, you know, 12 to 40 weeks. And so we're always working backwards from that. The city approval process has bounced all over the place in terms of time frame, sometimes faster than others. You know, when we went through COVID and things were changing, world of submissions on online versus in person, you know, that there's some long drawn out permit processes. I'd say that's generally improved now, but on every one of these projects, you've got to improve, you've got to involve everybody from the kitchen staff of, you know, how they're going to design it and build it and the kitchen equipment they need, to liquor licensing and making sure that we have all of the appropriate guardrails and signage and occupancy loads calculated. And each one of these pieces doesn't always run concurrently with the other. They're sort of, it comes kind of linear in its approach, and subsequently time is always kind of the most valuable asset in every one of them. And we burn lots of time going through trying to appease each one of these different governing bodies to get to construction.
One thing it's like, I mean, I second everything you're saying. We watch it happen all the time on the brokerage side of it. And we try to educate them the best we can, but we also don't have the same level of expertise that someone like yourself would have in the actual timelines. But sitting there watching tenants burn up their fixturing periods and their free rent periods, they don't even have a permit in hand yet. And sometimes that can be the difference between tenants getting the doors open and not open because they've spent $100,000 in rent before they can even get their doors open because they've just completely underestimated everything. What are some maybe common mistakes or pitfalls a lot of tenants might make? And this is obviously probably more directed at the first-time tenant, but what are some common mistakes and pitfalls that people make when they're thinking, I want to open a restaurant, here we go?
Great question. I mean, there's a million pitfalls. I think from a leasing side or leasing perspective, and I've seen it all over the map, I think when there is a base building landlord that's a really savvy landlord, an experienced landlord that wants to see success of their tenant. And I love it when we have that scenario. They understand the length of time it takes to get a building permit, the length of time it takes to get their design put together. And so those landlords seem to me to be the ones that are the most accommodating on long fixturing periods, they don't actually start the lease until a building permit is in hand. Now they've got various checks and measures to try and help and make sure that the tenant is moving the process along. And I think that's, again, where we can kind of add some service and value where we're saying, we've got 3 months to try and get this to this design phase and we want landlord's approval at such and such a point. But, they've structured the lease in a way that has given the tenant the opportunity for success because they're not paying a lease before they're even into building permit process. Or I've seen leases start where we're halfway through design and we've got 9 months to go before we get to construction. And that's extremely stressful for any entrepreneur or tenant that's going into a space that they're just bleeding cash month over month. So I think that's number one. I always tell our clients that, hey, let's go back to the landlord and see what they're willing to do for you or how they can work for you and how they can help you in this process. I think that's fundamental and number one in finding success in these projects. But, again, if I speak to the restaurant world where HVAC is this huge and complicated beast in the project, we need to understand that the building allows for it, affords it, has space to exhaust, that leaves functional space in the restaurant without eating up that just mechanical systems. I can't tell you the number of CRUs we go into now where the buildings have become so complicated. They're often at ground level. You've got electrical and mechanical rooms below in the parkade and the concrete slab where we've got to put a kitchen in and we've got to drill 100 holes through the concrete slab. We simply can't find the access and location down because the concrete slab is so full of services that the layout that you thought optimized the space no longer works. So, when the time and ability affords, we're trying to get in and do concrete slab scanning in advance to say, can we actually put the kitchen or the retail area where we want it in this space? So there's definitely a component of due diligence that can very much help the success of these projects. A relatively easy pitfall is go into a space and say, do you have three-phase power and do you have enough ampacity in it to power all the equipment do you need? Are you an office space or a retail space that's going to have X number of people? What's the HVAC? What's the AC and heating capacity of the base building supplied equipment? Are you going to be comfortable in this space? And I think that, again, goes back to how much success or enjoyment people have of spaces that they take on, whether the mechanical systems are there and they work. It's not the glamorous and sexy parts of construction. It's not the first thing everyone sees, but you feel that and have that experience without even knowing it. So those are all kind of like the meat and potatoes of taking on commercial spaces and working those commercial spaces that we really try and focus on and give people or shed some light on them for clients that might not have that as an area of expertise.
Are there TI upgrades that offer the best ROI for landlords? Like even beyond like say a tenant's lease?
A fair question. I think that we work now in enough projects where if a restaurant goes into a lobby level of an office building that services the office building, you know, it's like I'm seeing that actually, and I've seen it a couple times now where it's almost a development condition with the city that says we want you to have these various spaces in the lobby level to service the hundreds of people that work above it. And so, you know, yes, every restaurant is specific and every kind of kitchen is built around a menu that can be modified and accommodated if the tenant were to change. And I think you're definitely getting some good return on investment with that.
Well, I think one thing too that we often see, and then you can probably speak to this better than I can, is like ecologizer units and all of this stuff now that comes in play. The best piece of advice I think we could ever tell a potential restaurant tenant is to engage a contractor very early, because there is a lot of times that we will go through the whole process only to find out that the base build can't support the need of the restaurant, or they go into a building that maybe it's so old it doesn't have sprinklers. And then there's a whole bunch of these other costs that come out of the woodwork that they're not anticipating that really throw it off. Is there any one point you could say, hey, when you're looking into a space, these are like the three things you need to look for right away before you probably really dig in any deeper, assuming that they don't engage your services well before we look at the space, which is what they should do in my opinion.
Yeah, fair. I think another like kind of key item, as I alluded to earlier, was looking at the HVAC systems. And that can be a simple note in a lease that says they're affording 3, 4, 5 tons of cooling to a space. I think that goes to the comfort of the space. And so having someone just, you know, at least acknowledge that there is cooling for a certain amount of usage or a certain occupancy load, that's usually noted in the lease documents, or landlord can provide that. I think that's, you know, hugely valuable to look at and sort of a good starting point. But definitely it's an item that we would like to see and comment on and really dig into the details of what a prospective space has and how it can help or hinder a tenant that's going into it.
Raf, how has the TI landscape changed over the past 5 to 10 years?
I think that we're definitely seeing less, us personally are seeing less office spaces or a desire to be building out office spaces. The work remotely thing, although it's seen its peaks and valleys, and maybe it's coming back a little bit now with the people's desire to be together and have the synergy of a team together. That's definitely been one that we've seen ups and downs on. In terms of the changes in zoning districts and how quickly the city is Vancouver, Burnie, pick a city, how quickly they're like developing has meant that, you know, permitting processes have gone in some cities very drawn out. Like we're seeing a long process to get permitting just because the cities are over tapped on their capacity to review permits. I did one project, a small, like simple sort of retail focused space in a municipality over this last year. And what was a simple job, relatively low cost project, was well over a year in simple building permit. And I would say that in that specific municipality was a direct result of them being, the city staff being overtapped. There's too many things going on. They couldn't prioritize that project.
Raf, I'm really curious, what, you know, looking from the restaurant landscape here, COVID felt like it really changed the restaurant business where, you mean, the food apps took precedence. It feels like maybe some footprints got smaller as costs continue to rise on the rental side of it. As an example, you mean, I live in Coquitlam and the new Cactus Club that opened up, there's a completely separate entry door or window pickup for DoorDash drivers now versus them cramming the lobbies. What have you seen changed on the restaurant side of it with the build out, or maybe the size of the build out that potentially tenants are now looking for that maybe they weren't years ago?
No, that's a very salient point. It's every new space that we're working on in design or construction, every new restaurant space has making some accommodation for, and if they're not, we're asking them and telling them that they should be to service the pickup drivers. Like we're building a separate cash counter for it. We're building storage shelving for it. You're trying not to impact the experience of a person that's coming to eat in a restaurant and not wanting the lobby chock-a-block full of Uber Eats drivers. So that's definitely something that's new. And I think it's fundamental to a lot of these restaurants' business that they're making a ton of their sales that way. And so being set up and ready to expedite for it is becoming a real component of the jobs, like having enough counter space, having, you know, from an operational perspective, I think they're thinking they've got to have a person that does that, that packs bags, and then that means that they've got to have space for them and all the supplies that come along with it. I feel as though we're seeing a bit of resurgence in people wanting to go to restaurants. I mean, Vancouver is such a great city for food. And if you're a foodie, you have no shortage of new places and the handover and changeover regularly of restaurants. Not all of that is happy in, you know, when people see their favorite restaurants close, but oftentimes those spaces get repurposed for new restaurants. And I think it's seen people really focus on, or at least we've been fortunate with our clients, that they are putting a huge focus on the user experience and the patron experience of a person coming into a restaurant. So cool and interesting design, making sure that in every seat that you sit in, the restaurant is comfortable. The lighting is, you know, at a level that makes you want to be in there. You know, people having button seats in a restaurant means that they're spending money, and the more time that they spend there, you know, they're better for the restaurateur to make their sales. So just really focusing around, and at least that's what we're sort of advising our clients on, of let's give your future customers the best experience in a space we can. And there's the technology exists now to allow us to do that. There's lighting control that lets you set the mood and have it changing over the course of an evening, integrating, you know, music and sort of that technology side of it that really makes people want to be in spaces. And I think it's almost those ones that you don't know that you're enjoying it until you take a step back or you leave the space. And well, I had such a great evening, and it was kind of a function of the space felt warm, the seats were comfortable, the layout was good. You know, like that's all kind of fundamental to the design side of it and executed in construction.
Raf, what's the most memorable TI job you've worked on?
Oh, good question. We've done a ton of interesting spaces. I would say we're super proud, and maybe I'm letting the cat out of the bag a little bit now, but we're working on and have just this week in the process of turning over the new flagship Nook restaurant, which is at 1155 Melville. It is a big, new, beautiful space. It was super well thought out. We've had an amazing team of people to work on it with. The consultants have been awesome. The client is fabulous. And I think as it opens its doors over the next few weeks, that people are going to be really impressed and see an awesome, amazing space. And I, you know, like it's maybe recency bias for me a little bit, but it has been just such a good process to work on. It was well thought out. It was design centric. It was customer experience centric. It's been great. It's been great.
And any horror stories? We won't ask you to name names, but
fair. Always.
give us the best one.
I think the horror stories come from just like a hugely mismanaged expectation of a client that says, you know, they're watching the HGTV scenario of, you know, places being built over a weekend, and they just, you get a client that gets into a space where, you know, and for me too, you know, I made a mistake of saying, hey, I really want to help this person, and I think I can, you know, change their expectation. And it just never happens. They go into it thinking or budgeting for, you know, a couple of months of design and construction, and they're going to get their doors open, and it's just become stressful from the outset. And yeah, like I can think of a couple of specific projects in the city I've worked on where just from day one, the expectation of what was going to get built and what it was going to cost and how long it was going to take, we just never align. And when there's a poor alignment between us and the consultant team or us and the client, then it's not fun for anybody. And I think that's maybe one of the things that we've kind of learned over the years and tried really hard to adhere to is that, you know, we look at ourselves as a partner in the project, and, you know, we want to look forward to the completion of it and taking our families there, taking our friends there, hanging out in the space. You know, we want to be their biggest customers at completion. And when there's total misalignment between us and a client, it's not a lot of fun.
So if I'm hearing you right, are you saying that construction and real estate is not how HGTV presents it?
Shocking as it may seem, no.
So what? So $1 million listing New York is all false? They don't negotiate $1 million deals over a glass of wine?
That's right.
Raph, we do have this segment called the Six Pack, six lighthearted questions that we end every show with. Can you stick around for that?
Sure, of course.
All right, Raph, we've kind of tailored this a little bit towards you because we know about your love for hockey here. First question out of the bag, do the Oilers bring home the cup?
I think they might, as much as I don't want them to.
What? ChatGPT agrees with you. I think that was...
ChatGPT thinks we're bringing the Oilers
no,
bring
no,
home?
No, they think that the Oilers are going to lose.
Oh.
But all right. They might. Okay.
I got two McDavid fans in my house, so that's all the kids talk about.
Fair. And I've got two kids that are pulling for the Oilers as well. I've got too many Oilers friends, and I couldn't, I don't know if I'm going to be able to live with them.
Well, it's better them to win it than Toronto. I think we can agree on that.
100%.
I think we can agree on that. I think
that's a universal truth.
Question number two, still hockey related. Do the Canucks trade Pettersson?
I do not believe they will trade Pettersson.
Should they have traded Pettersson? Should they have traded Pettersson and kept Miller?
Yo, for sure.
There you go. That's a consensus. All right, Raph, next question up. And this is where we really get to find out who you are. Favorite band or musician?
Oh, I'm not a big music guy. I never have been. I'm a podcast guy. I'm a talk radio, talk sports guy. But if I had to pick someone, and maybe one of the coolest concerts I've ever been to was U2 a number of years ago. So I'll go with that.
Good choice. Nice. Good choice. We'll give you that one.
You're on death row. We won't tell you why, but you have to come up with what's your death row meal? What's the last meal?
Last meal before you're all said and done. What you eating?
Oh, as a good Italian and a good Italian son, I would go with one of my mom's lasagna or one of my mom's pasta dishes. It would be that's an easy one for me.
So it's Friday night. Had a hard week at work. You've had a couple beverages. Somebody sticks a karaoke mic in your mouth. What are you singing?
Oh, got to think back to my youth. I might go with, I'd probably go with Journey.
Nice.
Classic.
And last but not least, favorite vacation spot?
I'm about to head out. I would say somewhere in Europe. Probably southern France or the south of Italy. I'd be seeking sun and great food, kind of a constant in my life.
Nice.
Amazing. How can people find out more about what you're up to and, of course, Marola Construction?
I appreciate that. We're going to be launching a new website in the coming weeks, but you can find us at marolacon.com. That's MEROLACON.com or find us on Instagram. There's a email in there that they can reach out to me at, and we're always happy to chat construction and potential projects. And like I said, provide the service of kind of reviewing spaces and talking about how businesses fit in them.
Amazing. Raph, thanks for taking the time to join us today. We really appreciate it.
I appreciate you guys having me on. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Raph. Take care.
Checking.
There you have it, folks. Our interview today with Raph Marola, principal from Marola Construction. A lot of great takeaways out of that one.
Yeah, no kidding. And I think the big thing for me is bringing on someone like Marola Construction early on in the process. Because how terrifying is that? You buy what you think is going to be like a great restaurant. You think you've kind of ticked all the boxes. And then a guy like Raph comes in and says, actually, hate to tell you this, but you can't put the kitchen here. You can't do any of the things you thought you'd want to do. And
it happens more times than you can think. And not even just, a lot of people assume it's kind of like the mom and pops, but I can tell you, we've worked with multi-unit brands that are sitting there paying rent for months on end because they didn't engage the right people at the right time. they may not have brought them through. I remember one situation where there was a drain access or supposed to be drain access on the plans, and they scanned it in this concrete slab and it had a parkade below them. It was a strata building. And there was so much rebar, they couldn't actually get to the thing. So they had to build the washroom somewhere completely different. Jeez. And run a set and core a massive amount to get back to the drain line.
Yeah.
Because that, and Raf talks about that. Little things like that, that if you do it early on, can help you a lot in the design phase, probably save you a lot of time and money in the construction phase versus just diving in head first. We see it all the time.
I've been to some restaurants recently where like the washroom is like half a kilometer from the actual restaurant.
Yeah.
And I feel like you got to go down six flights of stairs and like this and that. Yeah. And it never seems intentional, right?
No.
And I think the other big takeaway for me was when he was talking about just the explosion of like takeout, like Uber Eats and DoorDash and all the different. Because I mean, now like, so anecdotally, I was out with a colleague going for lunch the other day. We walk by this restaurant. It looks like it's got like a lineup around the block, basically. Yeah. We're like, ah, man, we only have 45 minutes. So anyways, he goes, wait a second. I'm just going to ask. He says, are you guys waiting? Like, and they're like, no, we're waiting for takeout. We're waiting for takeout. Then there's like three guys that are like Uber delivery guys. Yeah. And then it turns out nobody was actually in line. And there was about 20 people in the, and we would have totally just walked by, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, how much business are you leaving on the table if you don't have an appropriate place to put people that are waiting for takeout? I know like Tractor Foods now, it's like they have like a separate stand on the other side.
Almost have to now.
You have to, right? Yeah. And you were saying like you're seeing this all the time.
It's we're seeing it more and more and more. And like we talked a little bit on the program with Raf there about just how like the footprints are probably staying similar sizes, but the makeup of those footprints are completely different.
Yeah.
And it's like it's becoming so important. And maybe if you're like a first-time restaurateur, engaging someone like Raf that has all that expertise, he's going to ask you those questions during the design phase of things you probably haven't thought about that they've seen consistently with buildouts of small companies and big companies. And there's a really, really big thing you can draw from there because Raf goes on and he talks about the brand new Nook location, which is going to be just absolutely spectacular. Those are big. That's a big company. And people may not understand who the principal is behind the parent company of Nook, but I won't spoil it, but they're coming from a big, massive chain they built that these guys know what they're doing. So when Raf is engaged by these level of professionals, you know, they know what they're doing. And that's a level of expertise that's hard to put a price on when they're contributing to your design work to maybe cut things off at the pass and teach you things that you otherwise wouldn't learn until after you're open and realize maybe you would have made some alterations to it. They can maybe help you with that process out of the gate so you get it right the first time.
And you were saying, and in, we were talking offline here, but you were saying basically that a lot of the fast food or fast food, we call it, restaurants are kind of looking at what their delivery distance is now. That's like almost playing into it more than foot traffic.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I think it's funny because it's like, I don't know the metrics. I'm really excited for next week's episode. I've convinced Clay from Wildflower Pizza to come on the podcast and teach us the pizza business within reason. He's not giving away his secrets, but the reason why I was bugging him so much to come on is the pizza business is a really good litmus test for the economy. So we wanted to bring him on, hear all about how their business is going, what they're doing, and he can unpack it. So having him and Raf back to back make a lot of sense with it. But just now how the whole thing has changed that when we're dealing with restaurant type tenants, is they're asking about density and the population base within a certain kilometer radius.
Totally.
Because now they're thinking food apps. And we just did a recent deal for an international QSR, quick service restaurant. And they were more inclined to ask questions and want to know more about the density of the area within a certain kilometer race, how long it's going to take to get there than they were about parking. And it was food app driven.
I'm just thinking, like, if I'm going to eat McDonald's, like I do once a year or whatever, do I want to do it in front of my TV or do I actually want to sit in a McDonald's? I can't remember the last time I actually sat in McDonald's. No.
Yeah.
But this is the whole point, right? It's like, I feel like we're actually moving to two types of experiences. Yeah. It's either like the DoorDash restaurant, most of their business is delivery, or the kind of more fine dining, experience-driven dining where you probably have to have a pretty expensive build out because you got to build out in a way that you want people to actually spend time in.
Yeah.
And that's why we've seen, I think, the elevation of the rooms in all the best restaurants in Vancouver,
absolutely.
Right? It's almost like it's the length that people are going to get the space right.
Yeah.
Seems to be kind of elevated every single year. So,
and Raf talks about that too, that, yeah. that it's the experience, not just the food, that really has to hit home now. And there's totally. A lot of stuff put on the ambiance and the atmosphere and all that stuff now that maybe wasn't there. It's almost like a flight to quality type feeling where if you're going to go out for dinner, with all due respect to the Keg, I love the Keg, yeah. is you may not go to the Keg because it's maybe more of like a cookie cutter steakhouse. We want to go to like a Hive steakhouse for that one time we go out because now we order more. We order in more often than not because we can get all these great food options yeah. delivered to our door and not have to go stand in line and experience them in person like we had to maybe years ago.
Totally, totally. Corey, if anyone wants to get in touch with you, how can they get in touch?
They can reach out to us anytime through our website, williamwright.ca. You're welcome to send me an email, corey@williamwright.ca. Always love hearing from listeners. Or you can call our Vancouver office, 604-428-5255. Let us know what you're looking for and we'll put you in touch with any agent throughout the province.
Have a great week, everyone. And like Corey said, we're back next week. It's the pizza episode.
We're unpacking the pizza business. It's amazing. I'm trying to get free Wildflower Pizza for life. So that's part of the reason here. But we're unpacking the pizza business with Clay Spaulding. It's going to be an amazing episode next week, guys. Hopefully you guys can listen and join us. Take care.
Subscribe today.